Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Another episode of Atlanta Technology Leaders brought to you by our good friends at Band of Coders, our favorite Atlanta software developers. I'm Lee Cantor, and I'm with Stone Payton and James Douglas. How are y'all doing?
Good, James. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm well.
A little frazzled today? What's up?
I'm just trying to get the day through.
Through the day.
Uh-huh.
You're in America now.
Sorry. You'll pick up on this.
He's headed to Disney World, he said, before we went on the air.
Oh, wow.
You weren't kidding. You're really going to Disney World.
Yeah, I've heard there's a talking mouse there.
You're going to have a blast. This is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Michael Halbert. He's Senior Business Development Director with Mindtree. And we're also going to talk with Cynthia Morenweg. She's founder and COO of Great Parents Academy. But first up on Atlanta Technology Leaders this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome to the broadcast the CEO, the big boss, the grand poobah with Azenda. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Sanjay Bhatia. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me today.
All right, Sanjay, jump in there. You got to get closer. First of all, Azenda, what are you guys up to?
We provide a visual BI platform that gives users the freedom to explore the data visually. There's about 518 million people out there that are knowledge workers that currently don't have access to their data without going to IT. We help that by creating software that lives inside of their apps, let them see and explore that data visually and make better decisions.
And then, so you're the chief architect of this?
Yes, I am.
So now what was the thought process? What pain came that you were like, I got to solve this?
We were originally a consulting company, and it was at a time when data was thought about quarterly, and now we've moved everything to real time, and we took the platforms in place at the time. We do our projects for customers, and the second we give them data, they say, oh, can I have this? Can I format this differently? Can I sort this? And we looked around. There wasn't really anything that made it easy for that to do that themselves. So a few years ago, we invented it. And then joined ATDC. They helped us grow the company. Now we're, you know, just really scaling. I have an announcement today. We actually have Ken Walters, who's the former president of Infor and also from ISS, joining us on our board of directors as chairman.
Wow, congratulations. That's exciting news.
It's very exciting. I'm very happy to be working with Ken. He is an all-star and also just one of the most humble people you've ever met. And he's helping take our vision from, you know, we have about 100,000 users today, and we are focused on, you know, 500 million people.
Now, what was it like when you first started and you had the idea and you built the software, getting it out to those initial customers, doing the customer discovery portion of this?
You know, it was, we were a consulting company, so we were kind of building what we were being asked for already. You know, it's funny, you kind of do market surveys and, you know, like Edison and Ford said, you ask people what they want brighter candles and,
right, and faster horses,
exactly. Right. And so we decided not to build that. Instead, we created a visual environment that's very Google-like, where they can, without really knowing what they're doing, search for data and explore it visually. You know, early days were a struggle. There wasn't a market for what we were selling. Literally built the company on 22 credit cards as our initial funding sources. You probably can't do that today, but at the time, you know, that was an option. And then just found, you know, hundreds of partners that saw the vision, had, you know, enormous populations of users that wanted that freedom, that flexibility. And especially with the millennials entering the workforce now, if they have to go to IT, they're just going to skip that process.
And then just do it on their own.
And do it on their own. And that's what Azenda brings to the table.
So now when you say business intelligence, how does that play into this big data landscape that we're in right now?
So we're kind of a third generation business intelligence solution. The first generation was really consulting. You know, you bought a piece of software, you spend $1 million on it, and you couldn't use it, and you spend a lot more than that on some consultants to help you analyze your data. The second generation are tools like Tableau, Power BI, that are very analyst-centric tools where you hire an MBA or DBA or some other three-letter acronym, and everyone goes to them whenever they want a report. You know, we are expanding that population and giving everybody access. We are a third-generation solution, and it means if you have a mobile device or on a laptop, you can look at the data that they have created and modify it. We call that data customization. But you can also, with a Google-like search, really explore it on your own, turn it into patterns, and see what's going on, ultimately making better decisions and what I hope is creating a global paradise.
So now when you have your software and you're working with the customer, how much customization is are you able to do?
We actually work with the host applications that generate the data. And so it will look and feel like that app. More importantly, it will secure like that app. We have customers that have compliance requirements. I can literally say we have military-grade security because the Army has given us a certificate of networthiness saying so. And so whatever that user is allowed to see and do is consistent with that host application. So the last thing you want is to give people unfettered access that's easy to use without controlling, you know, and locking that down. So we're providing that intuitive user experience, but it's ultra, ultra secure. So I like to say, you know, without that security, it's like a car without brakes.
Right. So now the security, I'm sure for the customers, that was an important component. Once you were able to pull that off, they felt better about using it.
Absolutely. And a lot of our customers and partners, they look through a lot of the lists like the Gartner Quadrant, and they find nothing out there is really secure enough or flexible enough for the nuances of their application. So we don't impose our security model on the user. We feel whatever you've done, good or bad, is worth keeping, and we work with it.
Right. So now, moving forward, what do you got ahead of you now that you're involved with Ken?
We have a massive expansion. It's funny, we had an engineering meeting yesterday, and very few of the people there were 12 people in the room, and very few had been there a year. And so we're bringing on a lot of people, really expanding our customer base. There's about 10 million enterprise apps out there that have been created in the last 30 years. About a million of them get upgraded every year. And we believe that analytics should be the number one feature in that next version. And we're working with partner ecosystems to get that out there.
Is there, when you're working with a customer and then they start utilizing Zenda and they start, really getting into it, do they come back and they're like, wow, I wish this was here, 5 years ago? Like, what type of conversation are you having once they've, kind of started using it?
Oh, people were like, I can finally take vacations.
Really? So it's like actually a lifestyle change,
it's,
right?
It's we create freedom. And so for different people, that means different things. For the leadership, it's freedom to expand their business without having to worry about how the heck do you hire a data scientist. For the IT and developers, it's freedom to, focus on that core application or live their life. And for the users, it's the freedom to get access to that data without having a department that you have to go to and make a request to.
Now, is it does your customer, when you're talking to a prospective customer, are they thinking like this is too good to be true?
A lot of times it is. They not only do they take more vacations sometimes, it's really that they have this competitive insight and advantage now that helps them really grow their business. So I don't know if they think it's too good to be true.
When you're pitching it to them and you're telling them we can do all these things and we make your life easier in this way, you can access the data, you can use it in a lot more productive manner, they're buying that?
As soon as we show it to them, so one of the things we do is we work with them. We usually get some sample data, and we give them access to it in an uncontrolled way where they can just start using it right away.
And that's free? Or that's part of your – when you're.
We'll do that for 2 weeks for free.
Wow.
Yes.
So they can actually see how it's going to work in real life, in real time?
Exactly.
And just help me here. So you mentioned a number of the ways that you can help your clients. Give me some really good examples from our listeners of some of the obvious things that they're now able to know about their business that they struggled to before.
So we span a lot of industries. Healthcare is probably the biggest one. So the Centers for Disease Control is a client. They have us in, I think, 5 projects now, and there's about 117 looking at. So whenever there's a global pandemic or a government shutdown, it takes their BI team, many months to use a traditional data warehouse and add new metrics to it. Versus with Zenda, they can start analyzing new data in new ways right away. Oracle actually uses us for their life sciences technology, so that the research scientists, even though they're DBAs, they're PhDs, they're not technology folk with a SQL background. So when they have fresh data from the field, they can start analyzing it right away without that data warehousing delay, which can take some time.
Okay.
On their own.
So it's speed as much as...
It's absolutely about agility. Depending on where you look, typically IT is very busy these days. Mm-hmm. And they should be focused on things that impact everybody versus reports or things that a very small number of people need, and they need it very, very quickly. So it's kind of like pizza. When you're hungry, if you ordered a pizza and you knew it was going to be a couple weeks before you got it, well, you may not go that route. Mm-hmm. So data is like that. When you have a need for data, you get hungrier as every hour goes, and we provide a way to satisfy that hunger and that need very quickly.
Now, what's it been like for you personally to go from this, you know, you were consulting that idea for this business, and now you're getting this kind of traction and you're scaling at this speed?
It's a different company now, isn't it? It's really astonishing. I mean, the people we're bringing in that have built, you know, some of the Atlanta landmark companies.
Right, exactly.
Like Ken, I'm just really humbled that they're coming in and believing in this vision, and that we'll, you know, ultimately be able to reach all these people and create a better world.
So, but personally, has it changed? Like, because when you're a CEO of a startup and it's just brand new and it's an idea and you're trying to get traction that way, and now that you have some traction and you are attracting this caliber of people around you,
you definitely have to evolve as a leader. And, you know, sometimes that's a struggle when you're used to wearing all the hats and kind of doing things yourselves. As I've now been bringing people much smarter than me, you know, I have to step back and you know, I trust them. It's amazing. Just within, you know, minutes sometimes of a really talented hire coming in, how they, you know, it's like they've been there. And you can just have that trust in, if you acquire, you know, and attract the right caliber of talent.
So business intelligence has been around for a while? And
the industry has, yes.
Do you think it's going to stick around, or is this a fad?
It's going through generations now. Just like the internet, you know, 15 years ago, the only people on the internet were, you know, or most of them were Unix administrators, and you had to configure drivers and use these command line interfaces. Now, you know, you give a toddler a tablet and they somehow know how to use it. And so we feel data is going the same direction. A lot of the games that are out, these very advanced games that, you know, millions, sometimes tens of millions of people plays, you're really kind of a data analyst. And, you know, we want to make analyzing data at work just as much fun as it is in these gamified worlds.
Good.
Last question. Do you feel that the recent pioneering of kind of big data and how to get very, very clear answers from huge sources of data, that the pioneering that's been done so far is now going to move into more of a simplified format, where actually it's not about the amount of data I can get, it's how easy I can get it to
It expands the population of who is your data scientist, and it's a cost thing. So decades ago, when you were buying a multi-million-dollar, you know, Oracle database, well, you know, hiring three people that did nothing but administer that system made economic sense. Today, even the smallest businesses have dozens of databases and gigabytes, if not terabytes, of data, and, you know, there's a much broader population who wants to consume that.
Now, you're here in Atlanta, and I guess you plan to stay here for a little bit. What makes Atlanta your home?
Atlanta, you know, a lot of people are saying it's now the number one technology market in terms of building companies. You've seen a lot of recent, you know, triple comma or, you know, or billion-dollar success stories. We go out to the Valley. We have, you know, contacts and customers there. But Atlanta just brings that combination of, you know, family friendliness and a diverse culture and the amazing educational institutions that, you know, to me, you can't find anywhere in the country right now.
What about your talent acquisition? Are you having a hard time getting enough talented people to work?
No. It's honestly, we have more people than we're getting the furniture in from China so they can sit somewhere is taking longer than the talent acquisition, because we have a good story and the best people want to work here.
And you're
Atlanta
finding talent wanting to relocate here?
You know, we have people from throughout Georgia that have moved a little bit closer. And then, you know, we may expand a little bit to the West Coast. Mm-hmm. But we're finding there's a huge talent pool here that have built some great companies that don't get the credit in the media that they really deserve.
All right. So where can our listeners go to learn more?
You can go to www.izenda.com, and there's a gallery there that shows exactly what we do and what it looks like.
Man, you got some neat stuff going. Keep up the good work, man.
Thank you.
Hey, you going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I certainly will.
Okie doke. Next up on Atlanta Technology Leaders this afternoon, we have with us, with Great Parents Academy, Miss Cynthia Morin-Weck. Hello there.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're delighted to have you. What did you learn in that last segment?
A lot. I was trying to take it all in.
Yeah.
It was very cool. Yeah.
So Great Parents Academy, what do you guys do?
We have kindergarten through 5 math curriculum online, but it's pretty special stuff. It's not just that.
So what makes it special?
Yeah, so it is a combination of a private social network, rewards, a motivation engine system, and an entire math curriculum for children in elementary education. But it also pulls in parents, teachers, and business partners.
So now, is it for the homeschool child, or is it like extra for the person who's going through school?
Yes.
It's for everybody?
So, yeah, certainly we serve a homeschool market for sure, but also it's I'm currently a mom who has two children in public education in elementary school, and we use it as a supplement.
So now, is it a coincidence like Great Parent Academy is GPA? Is that an accident?
It's not an accident.
That wasn't an accident.
We thought we were being pretty clever.
So you did that on purpose?
Yeah.
In the naming of the company process?
Yes.
So now, now really, you brainstorm. What was the other names you were choosing from?
The first name was Learning Ladders because it's this stepping stone, right. Scaffolded instruction, and so it kind of started there. But then we started to really, basically the beginning of the story is, you know, working with my co-founder, Mark Buffington, he came up with this concept, and then he pulled me in via a mutual friend, and I have a user experience background. That's where kind of my academics come from. And when he told me the story, it resonated with me very strongly, and I thought, well, are Mark and I the only two parents that feel this way? I want to know. So my first instinct was to go do real user research to find out if we were alone or if we were amongst many. Mm-hmm. And I validated that we were amongst many. And then I said, okay, this is the stuff that makes a business model go. And we took it from there. So I used that research to fuel the design that we have now.
So now this is geared to the child? So everything is to teach the child, or is it to help the parent teach the child? Like what level of interaction?
Again, yes. I love these questions. Yes, it's really all about pulling that parent into the ecosystem tighter than they currently are. Because right now, the way the current ecosystem is the parent drops the child off to school.
Right.
The child and the teacher really understand what's going on. There's a sequence.
Right.
You hope. In a lot of cases, yes, but in some cases, I think no. But the child leaves, and they're at an age where when they come home from school and the parent says, hey, how was school today? They go,
good.
Great.
Right.
And that's all you hear. And you don't have a sense of how to help them, and you don't have a sense of how to pull what they're doing into the home life, because part of real learning and living and learning is having that be an everyday conversation. I grew up that way. My parents are both professors. So dinner was...
You're talking about this.
You can't
duck this from your parents, right?
But it also instills this feeling of always wanting to know more and having that be part of how you live.
Right, and it's important. And it's a lifestyle almost
where
we're talking about education and learning as just part of the way we are.
That's right. And
when you set this up, I mean, the whole idea of the gamification of education is not necessarily new, but mm-hmm. nonetheless, it's not necessarily well adapted.
That's right.
What did you feel was not being done that you really thought, I want to create a business that does this exceptionally well?
Mm. Well, I think that you're right. There's this idea of gamification, pulling people in to love learning. I think edutainment is used, but I think it's... a good balance of letting computers do what computers do well and letting humans do what humans do well and having that handshake be the appropriate one, that's what we've really spent a lot of time thinking about when we put this together. So I think that's what the GPA application does very well.
So now when you say gamification, are you talking about when the child does well, then they get like a badge, or like what does gamification mean in your world?
So there's a few kind of pieces that make the gamification thing make sense here. So one is this sort of feeling of the child feeling that sense of power and saying, because I've created this accomplishment, I'm unlocking new things. This is something that's used in games right now, and I watch my children. I'm probably more than any mom ever.
Right.
I watch my children play games all the time because I'm trying to figure out what is so compelling. What is pulling? What's making you pull this game to you? Because what we want them to do is pull knowledge to them mm-hmm. as much as possible. So I look at that activity and say, how do I recreate that? So this unlocking feeling, a sense of power. The other thing is praise, accomplishment, knowing, having people say, look what you did. So we have this motivation engine, and just the other day, it can be the simplest thing. It doesn't have to be elaborate or expensive. The other day, my child finish something. She got a Rockstar badge, which is a virtual good. But with that also came a surprise reward that popped up that said, you get to pick what's for dinner. And that's something I loaded myself. I chose, because as the parent, we want that power to say, my style is this.
Right.
And I don't want it prescribed to me. And in the research, that became very clear. That was a really, really big deal.
So the parents can customize their own rewards that they sprinkle through on a kind of random basis.
Right.
That's exceptionally good. I mean, that idea is clever. The only idea that actually a parent would come up with. It's excellent.
Well, and when she found out she get to pick what's for dinner, the whole, like, fist pump and, like, breakfast is for dinner
right.
was awesome. It was really fun to see that.
So now, did you come up with that, or did your research come up with that to add that element?
The research told me. So one of the things that I asked, so I interviewed families. At first, I thought, I'm going to interview parents, and I'm going to do personas on parents, because that's what UXers do.
Right.
And what I learned quickly is, no, the personas were on families. They weren't on parents or a mom or a dad. It was this family ecosystem that really painted itself and showed me this is what it's about.
So when you define family, the persona of the family, or is it single parent family, you know, two parent family? Like, were you?
So I have many personas because, right? Of course, families have a lot of different styles. And that was another finding, was, wow, there's not one kind of family. I did end up with kind of three main views of a family style. One was the family that the mom and dad work, and the time is a big deal, and there's a lot of plate spinning, juggling, and basically if things aren't broken, nobody's looking to fix because there's no time. Mm-hmm. And so it's this, help me see if there's something wrong and help me correct that and help me get on that, otherwise I'm not doing anything.
Right.
And then there's this other family of I've got all these different children. They're all very unique. The uniqueness thing, the non-generic sort of path thing, was a big deal. So we really paid attention to that finding. And the other one was it was more commonly a family that had one child, and they had a little bit extra bandwidth, and they wanted to dig in the weeds, and they wanted to know every single thing. So our app needed to do all those things for everybody, wow, but not force anybody into the other space.
Right.
Amazing.
So it was really fun. That's the kind of stuff that I
but
love.
What do you do? Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. What do you do with families? I come from a family of three. I'm the middle difficult child, as I'm sure you
hard
guys.
To believe.
Yeah, I'm sure you can really
I had
see
that on your profile.
I'm sure you got a big drawing.
Middle child.
Yeah. I'm the extroverted baby.
Well, how do you deal with it when you have different kids that have different abilities and different learning styles and interests? How does the app kind of function with that?
Yeah, so and actually I'm going to say one thing, and I'm going to get right there, because in the interview process what we learned is I asked the child one question, the same question is, the best prize for a job well done is, and the answer was all over the place, which told you. And
did that surprise you?
No, because I have two kids and they're totally different. But it did validate my suspicion that we had to be very customizable and flexible in that way. So my son, I'll review. My son said $1,000. He's a capitalist.
Wow.
Okay, I've seen your son. He's not that old, but he's very switched on then.
He's a capitalist, wow. I'm telling you. And my daughter was the opposite. She said, high praise from you. Which is totally different.
But she was that self-aware to say that?
That's the kind of kid she is.
Did she change her answer after she'd seen his?
Did she know $1,000 was a choice?
Well, and what's funny is some kids said, I want to wear pajamas to school. Some, you know, it was all over the place. So I think that the question you asked earlier about the uniqueness of children really was quite apparent. So we made sure that the curriculum... and I did hire somebody who is a curriculum specialist for this. Highly flexible. Going to the gifted side when the gifteds were ready, they tend to really go fast, and they tend to pull things. And if they get bored, they get switched off. To the other side of a child who's struggling. So the way that we have an algorithm that's pretty complicated in there that's basically lets that child take their own unique path through what they're ready to do. And that's the most that to me is just gold. When she showed me her idea, I was like, that is cool. Mm. So the software does that. And that's what computers do well. And you're letting that computer do that. And then the child is basically informing it, letting it take them down the right path. So
is there any space on with the, I guess you're calling it an app? Is that what this is?
It's a web app.
Web app.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's collaboration, there's socialization with other people. Like, do they work together on solving things together, or is this kind of a solo experience for each child?
Oh, so the private social network that's weaved into this, it's the what we call the engage part of the platform. Mm-hmm. It allows people to friend other people. So basically, if I'm the parent who purchased that grade for that child, I'm automatically friended, but then I can pull my husband in. I can say, oh, you know what? Grandma is super involved with this experience. I'm going to invite her. I love his teacher. I want her invited in. We can all have this group conversation.
But what about another
something.
Kid?
We can. You can also do that, but it's parent approval. Mm-hmm. So at this age, what we're trying to do is make sure the appropriate approval process is in place, and we spent a whole lot of time talking about this because in this age especially, what I'd love is that, you know, I won't let my child go on Facebook yet. I think she's too young. I won't let her do Instagram. I think she's too young. But I do think she needs to become socially responsible with digital tools because it's part of her future. So if she's in a space at a young age in a secure and a constructed, you know, structured way where the parent is still the controller and the approver, and if she says, I want my friend Hannah to be my friend in here, and both moms go, okay. And we all see her thread. I can see her thread if I want. If I see that she's not handling it well, I can undo that. Mm-hmm. But if she is, I want her to do that, and I want her to succeed and be a socially responsible, you know, communicator in that space because it is what's going on in her future.
Now, I have a kid that's in high school, and I see them in public school, and mm-hmm. he went through public school the whole time. I see the public school spend a lot of time not using technology, like on purpose.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to the degree, like, they're not allowed to use a calculator, you know, like that they have to learn a certain way, even
right.
though that so many kids are dropping out of science, technology, engineering, and math,
you yes.
know, and those people tend to use calculators, you know,
right.
but they're purposely not allowed to use it.
Hmm.
Is there some elements that are encouraging them, the child, to use the technology the way that it is?
You mean, does our web app encourage
right.
that? I think so. I mean, I think that in elementary school, actually, the opposite is happening, which is really an interesting thing to hear about the high school space because all of the classes have iPad carts, and now whether their infrastructure and their network really help them use those appropriately
right.
is a whole other story, which I find interesting. But it'll get there. They're trying to figure out how to integrate these technologies because what they see and what is so obvious, and maybe it's a generation thing, is that kids love working with digital technologies. It's fun to them, and they associate that love and that excitement with these tools. And the teachers are, I mean, they're just so inspired when these kids light up and the light bulb goes off. That's what they're there. That's why they teach. That's what they're there to do.
Right.
So,
but I see my kid, like, he'll go on Google and he'll search something and he'll, you know, go follow, get lost in a maze of learning,
mm-hmm.
which is the objective.
Right.
And then go back to the classroom, and they're like, no phones, no, you're not allowed to use any of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're almost kind of fighting the fact that technology exists and that it can be leveraged.
I think in that space it might have to do with the risks that they see rather than the opportunities.
Right. But so in your web app, there's opportunities to leverage the technology that's right in front of them.
There is. And what we try to do is create a structure where those risks
are minimized. Right.
They're really not risks if the parent makes good decisions. But it's in the parent's control.
So now, where are you in your company's lifespan right now?
Actually, I was just talking to somebody about this, but I feel like, you know, when you talk about product and then sales,
mm-hmm.
we're putting the T on the we're crossing the T on the product. So the product is, you know, really getting to that place where, I mean, we're agile shop. We're always going to, you
right,
know,
that's
evolve.
That'll never be done.
But the core components, the motivation engine is there. The engage network is there. The curriculum is there.
So you
there.
Have people using it
yes,
right now, and
yes.
Is it in a beta state? Is it out
it's
in the
not,
wild?
It's out in the wild. And it's really exciting to hear parents. I don't hear it directly, which is a real It's hard. I hear it secondhand from my chief business officer, but he'll come in and go, I just got this support ticket. And every time you get a support ticket, you go, oh, but this one was said happy. And it was like, my child did 10 lessons last week. They liked it so much. And I'm so excited. And hearing that kind of stuff is just like the best medicine I've ever had. It's now, very exciting.
Do the kids and the parents see it translating into their GPA?
Wait, ask that again. I'm sorry.
Using your web app, are they seeing their kids' grades improve and things like that?
Yeah, so the interesting thing that starts first, and I saw it myself with my children. They were beta last school year. Mm-hmm. But my son more than my daughter, the confidence level change was huge. That was the biggest thing I saw first. It wasn't the grades. It was this shoulders back and I can do it feeling, mm-hmm. which translates into the awesome grades and the great test scores that he did get after that happened. So now that he's kind of on track using it, I mean, his math skills are superior, which I love seeing it. It's really satisfying.
Now, do you think either of your children, do you anticipate them pursuing STEM careers, or is it just too early to tell yet?
I laugh because my parents are Georgia Tech professors, and uh-huh. I'm a technologist, and...
So they have to.
I mean, I don't know how they wouldn't, but right. I'm also of the mind that I want them to choose the path that makes them most in love with doing things. So if they pick artist, great, but, you know, statistically, maybe not. Maybe I just laugh. I can't help myself.
You've done the math side of things, or as I would say, maths. Do you have kind of plans to roll out an English kind of program? Is that very much, this is just the first iteration?
Well, that's a great question. We're really interested in STEM.
Okay.
Because it is quite shocking, the statistics around the skills that a lot of the future generations do not have. And it isn't even at the level that I thought. I mean, I went into this understanding some of those issues, but not at the level. We were talking to some business, because we were collaborating with businesses a lot, and the people who hire right now feel the pain of people, not at the executive level, but what I was shocked by was, you know, Georgia Power saying, you know, we can't find linemen who have the skills of today. We don't see the pipeline. That was shocking. Mm. So we really care about that space. The disparity in the scores are way larger than in other spaces, so the need is really big. So science is definitely on the horizon for us, and then coding.
Now, are you seeing that boys and girls embrace this the same? Because, you know, women in technology, you being a woman in technology, mm-hmm. you've seen this with your own eyes.
Yep.
You know, there's many more men in technology than women.
Yes. I think the response of girls and boys in this app is similar. So I like that, because it should be an even playing field.
Right.
And it breaks my heart to hear not only just girls, any child say, I'm not good at math, because that's just, it's not true. It's a perception.
Right.
So breaking that perception and saying, here's how you are good in math, and getting them down that path, but also breaking that disparity of the girl not being good in math thing, because it's real and it needs to go away.
Now, for someone who has grown up in the technology environment yeah. and is in technology, do you have any thoughts on why that is? Like, why girls at a certain age just stop gravitating towards math and science?
I do think there's social constructs. You know, I certainly never knew the reality of not being good at math, because my mom taught calculus.
Right, so you were...
So I didn't even know what that
You didn't know world
meant.
That didn't embrace
but
it, math.
But a woman was modeling,
right.
I can do math
exactly.
all day.
Exactly, so you didn't think twice.
I didn't think twice about it. So I think what we need to do is help our parents prepare themselves to say to their children, you can be, and even though I had trouble, I'm going to empower myself, because I have this, and I'm mm-hmm. using it as a tool, and I can give it back to you, so you don't have to feel that way.
And this web app helps the child do well right away, right?
It does, but it also helps the parent support them because they can go in and look at the instruction and curriculum too if they need to.
And that's why the format's so helpful. I mean, there's so many iPads that kids are using and their parents have no clue how to do the game that they're playing.
Right.
And if it actually can work at the speed that they understand, the parents don't need to.
They don't need to.
I mean, it's helpful if they do, but they don't need to. And that's, again, why I think it's a great way of getting people onto a different track, irrespective of their parents' ability or lack of.
That's correct. Yeah. Yep. That's right.
So now, what do you need right now? You need more clients? You need more users? What do you... You need more businesses? Because you mentioned there's a business component as well, like businesses can get involved.
Well, the way that businesses get involved is not every parent in the country can afford to buy their children an app. And we don't also want this company to be about the upper middle class and wealthy parents letting their children get ahead only. It's, it's just, you know, it's not what we believe in. So we have a program called the Educational Community Partnership where businesses, we're bringing businesses and family foundations together with schools that Title I and free and reduced lunch schools and letting those companies contribute towards license for those children so that they have an even playing field. So we're really excited about that.
So then how do you roll that out?
Well, it is rolled out, and we have about 5,300 students in different schools in Georgia that qualify for this, and then the foundations and companies that are partnered in sponsoring these children.
So they, these foundations really embrace this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're looking for, like I said before, they're looking for ways not only to do feel-good things and be a part of education, but also to help their own employment opportunities. They want to hire these kids someday. Right. So they're very motivated to empower these children.
And then, so right now you said the curriculum for the math is out there in the wild and going gangbusters. And then you're working on the science.
We are about to. We need to put the T on the product T. So we haven't started the science
curriculum.
But you
built the infrastructure so that now you can just pop science in, what, a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, yeah. No big deal. Easy peasy. Yeah, so the way we've constructed the software, it's so modular and so scalable, flexible. That was one of our themes, that there's a lot of things we can do without recreating the wheel, which is great.
And then the age range will stay the same, or is that going to expand as well?
That's something we want to look into expanding to, but it's really different socially when you get into the upper grades. It changes.
Right, it's like almost a different product at
it,
that point.
It really need to think about it because the parent involvement and the way that everybody interacts and the way the schools want to pull you in and not pull you in is different too, so we have to think about that.
And then if somebody wanted to learn more, the website?
Is www.greatparentsacademy.com.
And then they go on there, and then can they start playing, or they have to buy something? How does it work?
There's a free trial, so we know when they get in, they're going to love it. So it's a great thing. They have 14 days to kind of go in and really play, and we say play because it's like play, and fall in love with it and buy it.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Hey, stay with us, will you? We got one more guest we want to visit with, all right?
Okay, great.
All right, next up on Atlanta Technology Leaders, we have with us Senior Business Development Director with Mindtree, also of note, going to be out at Oracle Open World booth number 2434 next week, I think. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Michael Halbert. How you doing, man?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
So you learned anything yet?
Yes. Your application is fantastic. I'm very big on STEM, and I'm just fascinated by what you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much.
I love it.
Great.
So now, great success.
Oh, thank you so much.
So Mindtree, what are you guys doing for folks?
So we build wonderful applications that help businesses and societies flourish, and I think what you're doing really meets the definition of helping societies flourish. So we're largely a software engineering firm. We've been around for 15 years. Would you like for me to kind of give a little overview of Mindtree, or what?
Sure. Why don't we start there?
So, we're out of Warren, New Jersey, and the company has grown a lot over the past 15 years. So, we now have 13,000 employees, which we call and refer to always as Mindtree Minds, which I think is kind of maps to your idea, and it's really wonderful. And so, in that, we're a global organization with 28 offices around the world, and we have delivery centers here in the United States and in every major city in India. So we help a variety of companies in four different quadrants with software engineering needs.
And then, so what's an example of an interaction you have with a client?
An interaction.
Like, what's the pain that they have and that your firm solves?
Okay, so there could be, and you mentioned it earlier, you're building a product. So I work with clients largely in the ISVs that are building commercial grade revenue generating products. And so we'll work with them through product ideation, where we'll help them understand the features and functionalities and personas and use case studies and all of that, right through to get a minimum viable product out in the market, and then go into phase one, phase two, phase three, and always supporting that product throughout its entire product development lifecycle. And then finally, you know, when that product hits, we'll say version 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there, it's now 8 or 9 years old. The company has to make a decision. Does this product have legs? And do we need to add more features, functionality, add a mobile application to it? Or do we want to sunset this and just run maintenance management and support on it? So we can help them throughout the entire life cycle
of the product.
Correct.
Is there any products you've worked on that you're especially proud of?
I think Mindtree's, yes. Okay, so Microsoft is a very big client of ours, and we've built 1,100 products for Microsoft. So all of you folks use Microsoft products. Mindtree had a hand in 1,100 of them.
So Vista is your fault?
Pardon?
Blame you for Vista?
I was thinking of Windows 8 you would talk about, since a lot of folks don't seem to like it so much.
So how do you work with a firm like Microsoft?
Well, it's a very big firm, so it's you're working with various different product managers, and
right.
It's you know, they're always looking to take cost out. They're always looking to bring the highest value to their organization. So it's a very difficult situation in a sense, because you have to generate value constantly with Microsoft.
Now, it sounds like you're kind of like the guys behind the guys. Like, they're taking all the credit, and you're doing some of the work kind of behind the scenes. But you're a partner with them because you're helping shape their idea and bring it to fruition.
That's a wonderful way of thinking of it. Uh-huh. So we don't own the IP. We just build it. And Microsoft owns it. So
right?
And that's it's that way with virtually every opportunity.
Every client.
Correct. Yeah, we build it, they own it. So we try to de-risk that and take some of the risk out of it for them, because mm-hmm. we have a lot of people who are expert at building commercial grade product, which is very different than building an application or internet portal. But we try to de-risk that for them, because we do have a lot of processes, people, and methodologies to deliver those products with good quality.
So now, is there sometimes after you've been working with a client for a while that you're like, hey, I have an idea that you might think of, that maybe that it's a path they weren't on? I mean, because you're kind of immersed in their product and what they're up to, right?
You're absolutely right. But here's what happens, and you're right about that. So we become a strategic, trusted partner. So they do listen to a big idea that we'll bring to them, and they mm-hmm. appreciate that, and they actually value that notion.
And there's no fear that since you work with so many different clients that there's any kind of, you're kind of working on a competitor, or there's, you know, you have offices all over the place.
We do. And we have to respect NDAs to the letter and T. So we're very, very careful about that.
And then how do you have your personnel, like, delineated, or how do you kind of put them on different projects and different customers?
We're very much an agile shop. And so we'll have pods that are dedicated to that client.
Oh, to certain clients. That mm-hmm. way you can kind of keep them separated and they don't even know what the other person's doing.
Absolutely.
Right.
And to that point, you know, we have a delivery center for Microsoft. It's dedicated exclusively to Microsoft. So there's mm-hmm. no other work that's done from that center.
So now, how did you first get into Microsoft?
It was 15 years ago. And I wasn't with the company at that time.
You.
Yeah, it predates my experience with Mindtree.
And then they brought you on to run the Atlanta? Is that how that happened?
Correct. So I've been selling technology solutions in Atlanta for 20 years, and so they were looking for representation in Atlanta.
So you've seen the Atlanta market change dramatically over those years?
Enormously, constantly.
So what do you think of how things are happening here in town?
We have a lot of Fortune 100, one of Fortune 1000, one of Fortune 50 companies here. So it's a huge tech center. I mean, the IT spend is well over $200 billion a year. And what I have found over the years that Atlanta, unlike a lot of other cities, we'll say, is very much a relationship-based city. Mm-hmm. And so you and nonprofit is key to that. I'm very involved in TAG. I've been involved in the digital ball for 8 or 9 years. I give back to the community constantly. I know you have the STEM notion, so you know I'm on TAG. I'm on a couple of different boards that I help people with, and I'm very interested in helping companies and organizations in Atlanta.
Now, why do you think Atlanta is unique in this way with this level of collaboration? I mean, we've interviewed companies from all over the place, and like in New York, it has a different environment, you know. And I don't want to pick on New York, but yeah. in some cities, it's more of a zero sum game, and then every man for himself. And in here, it seems there's a level of collaboration where you have even competitors working together, or you know, friendly competition more so than cutthroat competition.
You have identified something that is unique about Atlanta, and I've had many, many people come to Atlanta, and they're just astounded by it. And, you know, I think TAG has done a lot to facilitate that. Mm-hmm. I think that we built very strong networks of IT communities, and in that there's always some cross-pollination and some trust that's built over the years. And these things work very well. I think whenever a new company wants to come to Atlanta, and they'll seek my advice, the first thing I tell them is you've got to join TAG. If you want to get in there, and you've got to get involved in a nonprofit community in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. And then that feeling seems to be kind of, a lot of companies have that feeling. A lot of mm-hmm. the people who participate really immerse themselves in the culture of Atlanta. Yeah. And then, so I guess it kind of feeds itself.
Yeah, it's a gateway to doing business in Atlanta, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now, with Mindtree, we were talking a little bit about the Oracle Open World. Yeah. Now, do you attend a lot of trade shows? Is that part of your business?
I was at the Mobility Live yesterday.
Right.
And actually, that was a misnomer. I am not going to the Oracle World.
Uh-huh. Your company probably is.
Our company will be there, but I'm not going to the Oracle
World. I'm not either, and that's what I wanted to talk about today.
Where else aren't you going
to
be?
We went last year, but we're sending a team, and I don't get to play. Yeah. So I guess we'll have to talk after the show. They're not going to let us do that on the air.
But is that the way that you go to market, is through trade shows, or is it, you know, just one company at a time?
It's very much through trade shows. There's a lot of relationships that are built at trade shows. For myself, in Atlanta, and this is a little bit unique to Mindtree, I think, my world is very narrow. I have just a very few companies that Mindtree has personally selected that they want as customers. So I've been asked to spend my entire world, my entire time, working within this very small universe of customers.
And when you say small, are 5?
No.
100?
No, less than 100. Less than 100.
And how would you identify these clients? How would, if they were listening, how would they know, right, I'm maybe on his shot list?
No, when he knocks on the door, then they know.
Many of them I've already contacted, but that is such a good question because, and it's a wonderful segue into what Mindtree does. And whenever we engage with a new client, the one thing that we're very transparent about is that we want to have a strategic partnership with that client. We understand that takes time and trust and delivery of good quality. And so we'll go into an organization that is a sizable organization where there is sizable IT spend, and we'll explain to them that very concept. Home Depot is a great example. I'll use Home Depot because they are a client. We started there 3 years ago with just a very small team with that very notion of becoming a strategic partner. 3 years later, we're doing our run rate at Home Depot is around $15 million, which isn't a lot for Home Depot. However, over that 3 years, we have demonstrated competency. We have delivered that in a way that has exceeded expectations. We have built the trust. And so now we certainly think that Home Depot will become a strategic partner at some point in the very near future.
So you work on maybe one project, you just prove yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And then to demonstrate your capabilities. And then just over time, you just kind of earn more and more work.
Yes, it's very much an earned trust. So
it's that good work is a good selling tool. Is that what you find?
Good work and building trust with that executive that is your sponsor within that organization.
Mm-hmm. And for each of those organizations, these aren't organizations that won't have someone in play when you contact them. Most of them have probably had a partner or various partners. How do you get that initial entry-level project when actually they're not necessarily having a problem with their existing partner?
Yeah, that is a good question, and that is the big challenge. That's a big challenge for me when I'm working with large enterprise accounts because our competitors are well-entrenched within those. And so you have to look for a stakeholder that's going to that has a need. Sometimes that's better in product than it is in IT, keep the lights on kind of things and right. That sort of thing. So if you can demonstrate to them that you have some value, and sometimes it's an existing product and you want to, they need mobile. They can't find mobile. They don't have mobile capabilities within their partner ecosystem. And so we'll get a chance at building and delivering a mobile solution.
So you ask them to, you'll solve a problem that they haven't even started working on yet.
Oftentimes, that's true.
And that might be that all you need is that to get the opportunity.
And once we do have that, we'll say a foot in the door and we're delivering a mobile solution, we do it in such a way that it exceeds their expectations. And then they'll begin to think, well, you did that so well. Could you help me with...
In this other, or maybe it turns into mobile in a different division or something.
Right. And a lot of companies are on waterfall, particularly large enterprise accounts are on waterfall, and many of them want to move to Agile. And we are experts in Agile. And so we will help them move from, we'll say, almost the notion of crawl, walk, run. And so they'll want to continue to work on waterfall, but we'll deliver in Agile. We have a hybrid approach of how we can help them live in the world of Agile and waterfall. In fact, we call it kind of a waggle approach. And then eventually, you move from that into more phases. But there's a lot. It's a scary thing for an organization to move from waterfall to Agile.
Right. And then, so how do you help them kind of with that transition?
First, we'll come in and do an assessment of where they are. We have to understand the maturity of Agile within the organization. And that's just a pure on-site, 1 or 2 weeks, understand the people, the systems, the technologies, the platforms that they're using. And then we'll be able to put a roadmap together. And then we'll help them implement that roadmap. Not quickly. It's over a 1, 2, and 3 year period to actually move a large organization from waterfall to Agile.
And you've done that with other companies?
Yes, we have.
Around the country or here in town?
Actually, around the country and around the world. And in fact, we actually have cracked the code on Agile. We actually can do Agile and deliver onshore customers, U.S.-based, leveraging our Bangalore teams as well. That's really difficult to do.
Now, here, Montree, here in town, is it just you or you have a whole team of people?
I have some what we call subject matter experts and myself. And then there are a number of Montree Minds here, but they're at different client sites.
Oh, so they go on-site and they stay there?
Correct. We can do on-site work. We can do delivery from our Gainesville center or from offshore.
And one of the things that when I was doing a little bit of research on your company before the show that really stood out to me, mentioned it just before we went on air, is the culture that you have. It is very, very different to have a technology company that's as big as yours that retains such a unique culture. Can you just tell us a little bit about it? Because I do think it's quite unique.
It is a unique culture. And so I something to be really proud of. So as you know, Montree is a fairly good-sized company at 13,000 people.
Sure.
and very distributed workforce on a global basis. And so to take that culture and have everybody have a sense of ownership but over the planet is a really big challenge. So within Montree, we think like a small company. We move fast like a small company. We have very much open door policy. You would see if you came to any of our Montree meetings, you would see our lead executives and key executives, walking down the hallway, talking to people, and as though they've known them for many, many years, and in many cases they have. So we keep that small look and feel of the company, and because of that, everybody's voice and opinion is highly valued within the organization. So no one feels like I can't speak up anymore. So they are very quick to say if they feel that something's going right or something's going wrong. We also have a university that we've created within Montree to help people that want to go on a leadership path mm-hmm. or take the next level in their career. And that's always supported highly within Mindtree. And then this notion of we have a single focused notion within Mindtree, which has been, I think, part of the secret sauce. And it's very, very simple. And the idea is to delight the client. Mm-hmm. If we delight the client, we will win.
And that now, you, like you said, you have Mindtree minds all over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And do you ever have Mindtree events where you all get together and, like, you know, like Salesforce has Dreamforce or Oracle has Open World, where the whole ecosystem kind of congregates, maybe with the Mindtree minds and their happy customers?
We do that. Yes, we do. And we try to do that and facilitate those things whenever anybody's in town. I was in Bangalore just a few months ago, and we had a whole bunch of people together, and it was really wonderful to get to meet some of these
people.
Right,
because most of the interactions are virtual, I would imagine.
Very, very much so. Yeah.
So what's that like when you all get together in a room?
It was pretty wonderful because I felt like I knew these people. Now right. I had, you know, they were in real-time presence instead of on links, you know, we're
so in person we call real-time presence?
Yes. Well, I think of it as real-time now. Yes.
So yeah. Now you mentioned earlier that you have about 100 targets here in town that you would like to do business with or you've chosen to do business with. They just some of them may not know it yet, right? Yeah.
Some of them may not know it, but hopefully they'll find out soon.
So now, how do you go about this courting them and meeting them and opening up the door?
That's a wonderful question. And so and we talked about Atlanta being a relationship town. And so LinkedIn is a huge tool for me. And I've been on LinkedIn since its inception. I have, I think I have a lot of relationships that have been developed from TAG. And so I may be looking to meet a key executive at a company, and I can usually find somebody who plays golf with that person.
Now, so golf is your secret sauce?
No, it's not that. It's a, so if I was looking to meet you, I might go on LinkedIn and say, I'm connected to you, and 40 people are connected to you. So I have to write 40 notes to 40 people and say, can you help me? With a warm introduction.
Right.
So I'm looking for the person who does play golf with you or goes to the Falcon games with you or goes to church with you. And when I find that person and they call me back and say, oh, yeah, you know, we've been he's my neighbor. I've been with him for many, many years. I'll certainly help facilitate an introduction. And that's how that's it all starts.
Just
from there.
One at a time and kind of nurture each relationship individually.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's served you well over the years, I would imagine.
It has. Yes, it has.
And in a large company, and this is me writing furiously as you tell the answer to this, if you have a big company, who do you choose to connect with? Because you've got such a large company, you don't want to go to the person that's got the buddy-buddy relationship with the existing supplier. Mm-hmm. If you're going for what I would call like a precision connection, who do you choose?
So I like to stay at the C-level. And I will try to go as high in the organization as possible because I prefer to be introduced from a CEO or a CIO than to be introduced from a director. But you're absolutely right. You have to do a bit of homework. So there's some tools for that. And you have to do research. I read all the 10K reports. I find out what's going on in that company. I find out who their key partners are, what the strengths and weaknesses of that partner are, and what I can bring to the table that may represent a gap in their current relationships.
So that kind of due diligence and kind of investigative skills is important. At that level of relationship.
It's critically important. And so also, if I didn't do technology, I could probably be a detective or something like that.
Well, you have to have that curiosity, right, to follow the thread and find the right thing and the alignment and stuff.
Yes.
But I guess that's where the organizations and business associations like TAG come into play too, right? Because those people are probably a member of TAG and are volunteering for the leadership positions and they're immersing themselves in the community.
You know, you're absolutely right about that. And also, if you get involved, even outside of TAG, in a nonprofit organization, Tool Bank is a great example of that. You'll find great support by Tool Bank from Atlanta executives. And so you go to a meeting, and next thing you know, you're talking to the guy that you really want to talk to about doing
some
business.
Right, because it doesn't have to be like linear. Oh, he works at ABC company, so I have to knock on the door of ABC company. He can also, like you said, through his organization or passion.
Yeah.
he might be involved in that, and that might be an easier path.
Absolutely. And so, and that's why I reinforce the idea that nonprofit is a gateway to doing business in Atlanta. You're doing good for the community, and you're also meeting some wonderful people that you can do business with.
So now, what's next for Mindtree? What are you? You're just going to hit that list?
Oh, well, our goal is, you know, we've got revenue tracking at $600 million this year. We have plans to go to $1 billion. And so I'm going to do my very best to make that contribution.
And I'm delighted that I know you mentioned Microsoft, which is a very good company, but I'm much more impressed that you've got the BBC. That's much more impressive.
I thought that South Georgia accent, you wouldn't know that.
In August this year, they just got a big, big contract multi-year with BBC, which I think is the standard, not Microsoft, that's the standard.
Well, it is, and we're doing a lot of QA for the BBC as well. Yeah, absolutely.
And you made that happen, Michael?
Well, it wasn't on my side. You know, we're a global organization, so we have offices all over the world. Yeah, so it was our UK team that did that.
All right. So if somebody wants to learn more about Mindtree, where should they go?
So www.mindtree.com.
And then on the website, does it have information about Agile if they are kind of moving from Waterfall to Agile? Is there kind of white papers and other
leadership? It's a pretty comprehensive website, so they should be able to find whatever they need there. But if they're Atlanta-based, they can also just ring me up anytime.
All right. And Mindtree.com is the website.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
My pleasure.
If you have a great mobile or web idea, then Band of Coders will know how to build it too. Check them out at bandofcoders.com. They are a sponsor of the show. They underwrite the show, and without them, this show would not exist. So thank you very much, Band of Coders, for making this happen. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.